This is the loft, and on Sundays we have our Krishna Fest. The basis of the Krishna Fest is to discuss the ancient knowledge of the Vedas and to fill our ears with spiritual sound vibration and to taste spiritual food. The whole point is to reawaken our spiritual identity as a practical matter. Most of us have some kind of understanding that we're more than the body. Most of us like to feel that we are a spiritual entity, but we don't practically know how to act like a spiritual entity. Especially, you know, we have these bodies, and almost every waking moment of our day is spent pampering these bodies or satisfying these bodies or trying to maintain the bodies or trying to protect the bodies. If you made a mission statement of your life, it would probably always come down to the body. Sometimes we say, well, I want to find myself, or I want to fulfill myself. But this always translates into things that involve the body. Now, it doesn't take an intelligent person long to understand that everything about the body is temporary. Therefore, if I'm trying to fulfill myself and find myself in terms of the body, I'm fighting a hopeless battle for happiness because this body is always breaking apart. From the time you are born, your body is breaking down. It's dying. It's aging. Therefore, the ancient knowledge of India, the Vedic knowledge, urges you to use your temporary life for pleasure that doesn't have a beginning and end. This may be a hard point to understand, as I was discussing in Christchurch last week, because most of us have confidence and conviction that we know what pleasure is. Most of us are very convinced, I know what enjoyment is. But in order to become enlightened, in order to become self-realized, we have to have some humility. And that humility concerns accepting the fact that I actually don't know what real pleasure is. We can see that no matter what generation you belong to, let's say whether you're in your teens, your 20s, your 30s, 40s, or 50s, the fact is, no one is doing anything different. No one. Let's say you're in your 20s, and you can look at your parents, maybe they're in their 40s or 50s. You are not doing anything different from them. Both are trying for the same thing. As much bodily pleasure as possible, with some mental fulfillment. Now, according to the Vedic knowledge of India, the mind is also a body. It's a subtle body. Therefore, whether you're trying for mental or physical, still you're dealing with the body. The revolution in our life begins when we get beyond the physical body and the mental body. Those who understand how to live as spirit soul, they can actually have a glimpse of happiness. The experience of living as spirit soul cannot be purchased. It is something that has to be aroused by bona fide spiritual practice. But that's just the beginning. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the kindergarten of spiritual life. What is the kindergarten of spiritual life? First of all, you understand that there is an all-pervading spiritual energy. You understand there's no need to hanker for material happiness, and there's no reason to lament for anything you think you're missing. You're able to see all living entities as equal. This is the kindergarten of spiritual act. So you see how far our society is from just the kindergarten status. Remember, first, to get into spiritual kindergarten, you have to understand there is a spiritual energy. Not just theoretically, but you have to experience that. Secondly, no more hankering for things that you're desiring and lamenting for things you're losing. Third, see all living entities as equal, no matter what body they have. In this condition, you can contemplate learning spiritual knowledge. This condition is just the kindergarten. Now, if that's the kindergarten, what is actually real spiritual enlightenment, spiritual experience? Spiritual experience begins with this understanding as an all-pervading spiritual energy. But that will not suffice. That won't allow you to be happy. You have to go further. The Vedic literatures describe that God realization comes in three phases. First, you can experience the Supreme Absolute Truth as the all-pervading spiritual energy. When you make further progress, you can understand the Supreme Absolute Truth present in everyone's heart and in every atom. In Bhagavad Gita, you see, Krishna explains that there is a soul in every body, but there's also another person in each body. There's the individual soul, in other words, and there is the Supreme Soul. In chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that you are the knower in your body. You know what's going on in your body to some degree, not everything. But Krishna says there's someone else in the body who knows what's going on in your body as well as every other body. That's the super knower. Further progress in spiritual life beyond just understanding the all-pervading spiritual energy. The further progress is to understand the Lord, known as Super Soul, who is present in every creature and in every atom. But that's just medium-grade knowledge according to the Vedic standard. When you go even further, you understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who expands himself into an all-pervading energy as well as expanding himself into the super soul in everyone's heart and in every atom. So, the Supreme Person is not affected by what happens to his energy. Just like when you take milk from a cow, you may boil the milk, but you're not boiling the cow. Similarly, when you interact with the energy of the Lord, you are not affecting the Lord. Sometimes people make that mistake, thinking that everything is God. Whatever comes to me, that's God. Whatever I happen upon, that's God. No, this is a big misunderstanding. Everything that you're dealing with is the energy of God. Just like without the cow, milk cannot exist. But as we said, that doesn't mean when you do something to the milk, you're doing something to the cow. In one sense, the cow and the milk are inseparable. Because the energy is the milk is the energy of the cow. But in another sense, they're completely separable. So in this way, the Vedic literatures of India teach you how to see the whole material world as one with Krishna, and then again separate from Krishna. Now this is hard for the ordinary brain to understand. Generally, in fact always, with your material intelligence, you can only go one side or the other. You can think everything is the same as Krishna. Or you go to the other side and say everything is different from Krishna. But the actual truth is both. And that is what Bhagavad Gita teaches. Everything is the same as Krishna because it's all Krishna's energy, and everything is different from Krishna because Krishna is the source of the energy, and the source is different from the energy, using a rough example, just like the milk is different from the cow. Still, without the cow, no milk exists. So this is the real vision of the spiritual scientist, to see the energy of the Supreme everywhere and to see the Supreme. Both things together. Many people these days like to worship energy. They're attracted to nature. Look at the beauty of the mountains. Look at the beauty of the sea. This is all divine. And then other persons are more subtle. They say, we are attracted to the presence of an all-pervading psychic energy, collective mind, a all-encompassing subtle energy. Both these persons are still materialists. Nature, as we can readily see it, that is nothing special. And even psychic energy, which most people can't see and some people can, still that's nothing special. We have to train our vision to see the source of all these energies. Not simply these gross and subtle material energies, but we must train ourselves also to see the source of the spiritual energy. How do we know there's spiritual energy? Because the spiritual energy is causing our bodies of matter to do things. And when the spiritual energy, the soul, departs from the body can't do anything anymore. So, Bhagavad Gita will teach you that Krishna has spiritual energies and material energies. Actually, for Krishna, everything is spiritual, but he makes his spiritual energies act in different ways. Just like for the electric powerhouse, it's all electricity. But when that electricity goes into a home, you can use it to cool things, or you can use it to heat things. So for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is spiritual. It's all his spiritual energy. But that spiritual energy acts in different ways, sometimes as matter and sometimes as spirit. For us, the material energy is a problem. Why? Because we are tiny parts of Krishna. Even though we're spiritual, we're tiny. Therefore, when tiny us comes in contact with the material energy, we get overwhelmed. Just like when a spark of fire jumps out of the fire and lands in water, it's extinguished. The spark of fire has its natural life in the fire, then it's doing fine. But as soon as that spark of fire leaves the fire, then it lands outside and has problems. So we are like aliens. We've landed in this foreign atmosphere, but we think it's our home. And therefore we have so many problems. Although we are spiritual, we've contacted material bodies and the material world, and we've forgotten our actual identity as part of Krishna, and we're seeking happiness through matter. That is our basic problem. Seeking happiness through matter. We have forgotten. We're suffering from forgetfulness. Now, everyone can understand what forgetfulness is. When you go to sleep at night, you forget all about what your identity is during the day. And you get lost in the dream world. And when you wake up in the morning, you forget all about your dreams. You don't remember all your dreams. So when you wake up in the morning, you're suffering from forgetfulness. And when you go to sleep at night, you're suffering from forgetfulness. So much of our life is simply forgetfulness. Therefore, you should not be surprised that you cannot remember your past life. That's also forgetfulness. The stress at the time of birth is so much, so overwhelming, that when you pop out of the womb, you forget about your existence in the womb. But the Vedic literatures will teach you that from the 7th month of pregnancy on, you have consciousness. You're aware. For 2 whole months inside your mother's womb, you're conscious of having your back arched and being confined to this tiny space inside your mother. You're conscious of that for 2 months. But the time of birth, the actual time of birth, is so powerful, so painful, that you forget. The pain is so powerful, you forget your 2 months of consciousness inside the womb. Now, the Vedic literatures also tell us that for the fortunate child in the womb, not every child, but a child who had some good activities in the past life, the previous life, that child, during the 7th and 8th month of pregnancy, is simply thinking all the things it did in its past births. And it's vowing, this time when I get out of the womb, I'm not going to waste time. I'm not going to get attracted and caught up in the material world. I'm going to make a spiritual solution so I don't have to enter another womb. So the fortunate child in the womb is thinking like that. 7th or 8th month of pregnancy, you wake up and you find yourself in a horrible, excruciatingly painful position. And then you think of your past activities in your past lives. You can remember. And you vow, I'm going to make a solution this time. I'm not going to get caught up in illusion. But then, it's time for birth. The child is propelled downwards and out of the mother's womb. The pain is so great, you're being squeezed through this narrow aperture, this narrow opening you're being squeezed through, into a completely foreign environment, surrounded by all sorts of foreign people looking at you.
Oh, there you are. Oh. It's our brother, it's our son. Oh, so cute.
So then you immediately begin to think, oh, I am this body. This world is mine. You get so much attention. But meanwhile, no one understands the pains you're feeling. Babies can't communicate. It could be little bugs biting the tender body of the baby. The baby could be have things, not right about its internal system, and the parents are trying to figure out what's going on. Do you want a burp? Oh, he's hungry. Everybody has a good time thinking what the baby wants. And the baby can't communicate. But sooner or later, the baby realizes, I'm surrounded by all these people who have made me the center of attraction. And then those people are determined to make you a part of material existence. And you just go along with it because you've forgotten everything that you thought about in the womb. These are very extraordinary parts of the Vedic literature, revealing what the child is going through in the womb. But you forget all that. As soon as you come out of the womb, people are treating you like you are the body. Oh, you are a baby girl. You are a baby boy. Aren't you cute? And then immediately you're raised to fulfill expectations of society. And from that point, birth, throughout your life, you simply forget what the real purpose of life is. And society rewards you for that. The more forgetful you are of the ultimate goal of life, the more you get rewarded by society. Oh, you're not thinking at all about what is the meaning of life. Very good. You're a great citizen. You're not thinking at all what you are. You don't at all understand whether you are the body or not. You're not thinking in that way. Very good. You are a first-class consumer. What is it people want these days? They want a society of pure, dedicated consumers. That's all. And in order to consume, you have to work. So just produce and consume, and that's it. No questions asked. Don't worry about anything. Whatever you need, you can buy. That's the meaning of life. Work, buy, consume, and die. You can write this mantra on your walls at home. Work, buy, consume, die. Work, buy, consume, die. You may have a PhD. You may have so many certificates. But you know what the purpose of it all is? It's all to help to work, buy, consume, and die. So no one is concerned. What is my identity? Am I matter or something else? No one is concerned with high spiritual understanding. What is the ultimate? How do I understand the all-pervading energy of Krishna? How do I understand Krishna as super soul in everyone's heart and in every atom? How do I understand Krishna as the original person? No one is concerned with that. They're forced, since birth, by society, just focus on your senses. Just think about your senses, and it'll be all right. Now, it's our fault we've taken birth in this society. It's our fault we've taken birth in a society like this, because this is what we wanted. You know, when you see a little puppy born, or a little kitten born, they're simply thinking about the body, and humans are not any different. Generally, most people think, let me materially improve myself. There's no question of spiritual improvement. Now, so many people, they're not even thinking of materially improving themselves. They say, oh, it's impossible. Just live life as it comes, and don't try to improve yourself. The more you just live with yourself and accept yourself for who you are, the better you'll be. So in this way, everyone just slides deep into ignorance, and their only shelter is intoxication. When you get frustrated with your attempts for sexual happiness, or looking for esteem from society, looking for success, when you're frustrated with all that, you just get intoxicated. Where's the pub? Where's the smoke? And you just want to surround yourself with some friends who you can get intoxicated with and pass the time away. And this is considered a very nice life. So the Vedic literatures of India have an argument with that kind of life. It's considered utterly condemnable. For not for one moment should we allow ourselves to live like that. We have to see. Try to understand, what am I a part of? What is this illusion I'm part of? And where does this illusion come from? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will tell you that not only does the perfect spiritual reality come from him, but also the illusion. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, everything emanates from me. Matter and spirit, the illusion, that is Krishna's energy, because we want to be an illusion. So Krishna gives us that chance. Okay, here's an illusory world where you can pretend you're going to be happy and realize it's not going to happen. Maybe after many births and deaths, you realize happiness is not possible in the material sense. But you won't know anything better until you cultivate spiritual knowledge. So the real quest of life is how to find the most comprehensive spiritual knowledge. Now, immediately people say, ah, everybody's saying, follow my path. Everyone is saying, read this spiritual book. Everyone is saying, go talk to this spiritual teacher. But you have to discriminate. That's your responsibility. You have to be able to sift through all the various so-called spiritual solutions or real spiritual solutions. You've got to be able to sift through all that and find the real thing. That means we require an education. What is the Supreme Absolute Truth? That begins by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. That's the kindergarten. Then we should be able to see the all-pervading spiritual energy. That's still the kindergarten. We should see all living entities as equal, because even though they have different bodies, they're all spirit soul, whether they're humans or lambs or cows. That means if you're in spiritual kindergarten, you certainly know better than to go munching at McDonald's or KFC, because you know that even though the chicken or the lamb or the cow has a different body from mine, spirit soul is inside, the same as me. So seeing all living entities as equal doesn't just mean trying to see how men and women are equal in the human body. You have to see the spiritual equality of all living entities. Actually, physically, there cannot be equality. Impossible. Every body is different. Some have big bodies like rugby players. You can't be equal with that. Even between men and women, there's not equality on the physical platform. Since when have the men been able to have children? They can't do it. They're inferior in that respect. They'll never have that ability. So, spiritually, you can establish equality, because spiritually, in spite of the difference in the body, the spirit soul is the same. Whether the spirit soul is in the body of male, female, or cow, or lamb, it's the same. Equal. But materially, how can you establish equality? Someone will always be stronger than you. They'll have a stronger body physically. Someone will be more intelligent than you. They'll have more intelligence. But spiritually, there can be equality, because everyone has an equal right and chance how to become spiritually perfect. So we should be able to look ahead and see where our life is going. Take a look at your parents. Think, I'll be like them soon, or I'm like them now. And what comes next? We should be able to provide a forecast for our life. I know no one listens to weather reports in New Zealand. I've learned that. Yeah, our Stanley over there, he works for the Met. Yeah. So, yeah, he takes his job very seriously, charting the weather for the airports, for everybody, right? Yes. The most authoritative information on New Zealand weather. He's working hard on But he was a bit surprised the last time I saw him. Stanley comes from the Netherlands, so he's been here how many years? 7.5 years. So he's been here 7.5 years, but he was a bit surprised when I told him a few weeks ago at the table during dinner. I said, but no one in New Zealand ever takes weather reports seriously. He's going to be so. These weather reports are so nice. I worked so hard on them. They're so in-depth. I said, no one cares about weather reports in New Zealand. They know whatever it is said is probably not going to be right. Anyway, it'll change, so what's the use? I couldn't believe. He's up. And then I said, okay, just ask all the people around. Does anyone listen to the weather reports? Does anyone take the weather reports seriously? Everyone just said, no. We never do. He goes, All right. At least, though, we have to become aware of the weather report for our life. Where am I headed? What's happening to me? My body is getting older. My mind will get weaker. What will become of me? These things every intelligent person has to think about. Actually, the aging of our body and our being beaten by the waves of time, it pushes you to come to an ultimate solution. I must find out the eternal. I must find out what is the ultimate reality. But why don't we try to find out the ultimate reality? Because we think, but there's no pleasure in that. As if we're having pleasure now. That's the thing. We're proud. I know what pleasure is. I'm having pleasure now. Some of the time, anyway. Or I remember a couple months ago, I really had a good time. Sometimes, you know, when Monday comes around, if you're a working person, everyone asks you, well, how was your weekend? Yeah, Friday night was kind of nice. Yeah. How was your weekend? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw a good movie. You try to find a few moments of the weekend where everything went okay. Depending on who you're hanging out with, the best thing might be to say, oh, I don't remember. Oh, you must have really had a good time. You don't even remember. Oh, great. You definitely went over the... You definitely, you know, had a great weekend. You were so happy you couldn't even remember. I was talking to some... when I was in Christchurch, we were having our discussion on Sunday, just like now, and some 15-year-old girls were there. We don't have any 15-year-olds. 15, Julia? 19? Okay. So, they were giving me explanation. They were giving me secret party knowledge. I always wanted someone in New Zealand to be able to explain to me what's the latest thing happening in parties. Because, you know, when I went to parties, you know, it was the whole thing was boy meet girl. You know, you play the fast songs, then you play the slow songs where, you know, you dance close together, you know, that's the whole point of it. But now they're telling me, ah, forget that. You can boy meet girl, I can go on any time. You don't need a party for that. So, you know, the main thing, you go to a party and you drink and talk. You drink, smoke, and talk. And someone might be dancing along by themselves to the music. They're really drunk, and the people who aren't so drunk, they laugh at the persons who are dancing and really drunk. And you just talk about what this person's doing, what that person is doing. So she was telling me, one of the 15-year-old girls, and the boys always buy the alcohol, the ladies don't. I said, well, why is that? Why do the boys buy the alcohol? I said, I don't know. I said, let's call some boys and ask them why they buy the alcohol. So I called some 15-year-old boys over. You know, why do you guys always buy the alcohol for the party, you know, so the ladies can drink it all? They didn't want to answer with the girls there. Then I answered for them. I said, okay, girls, isn't it obvious why they love to buy you so much alcohol? They kind of, oh, really? So, that they explained to me was the point of the party, was actually to get so drunk you don't remember what you're doing. And then one of the 15-year-old girls told me, the coolest thing, the super cool thing, is if you can go back to school the next week and tell everyone that you woke up in the morning next to someone and you didn't know how they got there. That's like the ultimate party experience. To wake up in the morning and there's, you know, someone next to you, and oh, how fancy meeting you here. Oh, we spent the night together. Amazing. That's like, you know, the ultimate, you know, extravaganza. And the other thing is, if you're the last one standing at the party, and you can go to school the next week and tell everyone, I made it to the end. Everyone else crashed out, collapsed, went into a stupor. I was still conscious to the end. I know everything that happened. I know all the wild things that happened. I saw it all. I heard all the talk. I know. And you get the medal, you know. The last one standing at the party. And then you have a hangover, and you vow, I'm not doing this another weekend. Yeah, everybody seems to remember that. Oh, when you have a splitting hangover, they tell me, you vow never again. Yeah, then next week, it happened. Who said that? Yeah, next week you're right back in business again, right? Why? Insanity. Yeah. And after a while, do you ever get used to the hangovers? Yeah. Does anyone know? Do you ever get used to the hangovers? Yeah. So every weekend you vow, never again. And every weekend you just go out and do it again. Yes. This is the kind of society we live in, where the 15-year-old girls feel the coolest thing is if they get so drunk that they do things they normally wouldn't do, and then they can't remember the next day, and they wake up, and there's someone, oh, what are you doing here? Then they go tell everybody at school. They were also, the girls were also telling me that. Actually, they're not looking for that, these temporary affairs. They want someone to care for them. So they think that by acting in this way, that someone will actually care for them. So what happens, they have their party, and they have a little action after the party, and so they were telling me, then the next day, they're waiting for the guy to call them up. He doesn't call. They wait the next day, because they told all their friends about it. He's really serious about me. We really had a wonderful, loving time together. I mean, the real love was flowing. 2 weeks go by, the guy hasn't called them again. Then they start getting desperate. After about 3 weeks, they start crying every day and they realize the guy just used them. And then sometimes they even call the guy up, hey, you know, remember me? From that night 3 weeks ago? The guy says, yeah, I think I remember you. Anyway, it was a good night, wasn't it? Okay, we'll just leave it at that. And then they cry for another 3 weeks. So I was hearing this first-hand information. So this is what society trains the young people up as pleasure. They train, this is pleasure. And then when you get older, you think the same thing, you just do it in different ways, more adult ways. The adults and the youth just differ in the ways they approach their intoxication. That's all. And they differ in the ways they have their affairs. That's all. Same old thing goes on. And then you have to work to pay for all these things. After a while, you get frustrated of these affairs constantly changing, and you think, let me get one person and try to stick with that one person. We're going to make our own little nest. And what's the purpose of the nest? You think that if we have our own nest and everything is, all the circumstances and factors are arranged very nicely, then we'll be able to have a dynamic, wonderful physical relationship that ordinarily is not possible by these hit and run affairs. We'll have our own house, it'll be decorated the way we want, our furniture the way we want, and all that, and we'll stay in it together, and certainly then there'll be a good dynamic interaction. That's the hope. There's no other hope to life than that. We couldn't experience this complete physical ecstasy in having quick affairs. But if we just stay together long enough, certainly we'll have our peak moments, and that'll make our whole life worthwhile. That's all. And for those peak moments, we're willing to live together and go through a few battles and fights, and we're willing to work to pay money to create the conducive conditions for these peak moments. Of course, if we don't have these peak moments, we're going to knock each other's heads off, but if we just have a few peak moments in life, that's what it's all about. I didn't know. I don't know much about rugby, so I was visiting someone, and it was at the tail end of a rugby match, and Canterbury was losing going into the last seconds of the match, and then in the last 2 seconds they scored a try and they won it. So all the announcers, they were saying, "Yes, that's what it's all about." They just kept repeating it over and over again. That's what it's all about. So similarly, we have some peak moments in our life, finally, and we just keep telling ourselves, that's what it's all about. Yeah, that's what it's all about. So this is like a death trap we've caught ourselves in. We're willing to play ourselves so cheaply, a few moments of physical pleasure, or even mental pleasure, which fades so quickly, and then we're willing to consider, I'm successful. So this kind of life is condemned by the Vedic standard of India. Measure your life. Instead, we should measure our life how much knowledge and experience we have of the Supreme Absolute Truth. If we don't have that kind of knowledge, we'll never be able to leave the clutches of illusion. But our problem is we don't think there's any relationship between pleasure and experiencing the Supreme. Because we're proud. We think, I know what pleasure is. If I say to you, today we shall discuss the Supreme Absolute Truth and enjoy, you'll, oh, come on, get serious. If anything, we think we turn to transcendental knowledge because we are frustrated. Okay, I tried everything in this world. I did it all by the time I was 16. Now what do I do? Oh, maybe I'll try some spiritual knowledge. Do we ever dream that knowledge of Krishna is actually the highest pleasure? No, because we're so attached to thinking ignorance is bliss. The more you don't know, the better. Just don't tell me about it. Don't ruin my enjoyment with knowledge. But real pleasure is founded on spiritual knowledge, which begins with understanding, I'm not the body, I'm spirit soul. And then you must understand the Supreme Soul. You must understand Krishna. Because from Krishna, everything is coming, both matter and spirit. Krishna explains himself in Bhagavad Gita that he's the source of all living entities. And the highest pleasure for the living entities is to engage in eternal spiritual relationships with Krishna. Because Krishna has no material body. This is high knowledge now. Understanding that the Supreme Absolute Truth has form. It's not that the ultimate spiritual knowledge is understanding that there's no individuality, no form, no quality. No. The highest spiritual knowledge teaches you that there is perfect form, perfect quality, perfect individuality, which has nothing to do with matter or material contamination. So Krishna means perfect form, individuality, qualities. Krishna is the reservoir of all spiritual qualities. Therefore, we can easily shift our attraction from the tawdry, polluted material qualities to the superior spiritual qualities. Without a choice, you won't get out of illusion. Simply by being frustrated by material life, you won't get far. Even you may be so intelligent you can understand how crazy it is to strive for so-called material happiness. Still, that's not enough. You must have knowledge of the ultimate reality. And what better place to get knowledge from the ultimate reality than to take it from the ultimate reality? So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, I am like this, I am like that. You take this knowledge and you come back to me. That is real pleasure. So this is what Krishna consciousness is about. This is why we chant the Hare Krishna mantra. This is why we discuss the Vedic knowledge of India, which all points to Krishna. And this is why we take food, we eat food that's been offered to Krishna, all for reviving our dormant love of Krishna, our dormant memory of Krishna. Then, when we taste actual pleasure, we'll easily give up the inferior pleasure. And then we can end this horribly embarrassing situation in which we're just struggling from work to parties or the dole office to parties. No idea what will become of us, no clear picture of the future, and we don't care. We don't want to treat knowledge of the ultimate just like we treat New Zealand weather reports. No, we want to have a burning desire to understand transcendental knowledge. So it is each individual's responsibility to get the most comprehensive spiritual knowledge possible. You cannot blame that on anyone else. Each individual has to do that. Each individual has to understand the illusions that are stopping you from making spiritual advancement. And generally, you can always see those illusions are thinking I'm the body or the mind. Thinking my body and mind is more important than my enlightenment. Sometimes people, they get angry, they say, if we listen to you, how will we pay our rent? How will we put food on the table? They make it such an extreme thing like that. There's no contradiction between taking care of yourself and becoming spiritually advanced. That's really taking care of yourself. The horror is there's an art how to become spiritually perfect even while within this material world. That art is called bhakti yoga, the yoga of transcendental loving service to Krishna, in which all the energy is used for Krishna's pleasure, rather than us trying to use all the energy for our pleasure. That's what we're failing at. We are failing to use all the energies in our pleasure, and we can't see that, for our pleasure. We're failing to use all the energies for our pleasure. We try so hard. This will be nice for me. That'll be nice for me. You'll be nice for me. I'll be nice for you. And this way we go through our whole life trying to make arrangements like that. And then, finally, your body gets so old and breaks down, your mind becomes feeble, and where do you go next? You don't know. This is a tragedy. So for all those intelligent people, all the superior pleasure lovers who want to break out of these shackles, we have this Krishna conscious process. And we invite you all to take part in it. Any questions? Yes. Yes, you've tasted the food here before? Right. The food here is not ordinary food. When you taste it tonight, you'll realize that most of the ingredients you've tasted before, but there's something special. That's because the cooks have recognized that the food is energy and it comes from the source of all energy. So the food becomes empowered by being offered to the source of all the food. When you acknowledge that energy has a source, then that energy can be even more powerful for you. When you understand that the food is Krishna's energy and you take Krishna's permission before taking the food, something special happens to the food. In fact, it's no longer material. It becomes spiritualized. Because you recognize the source of all that food energy. So that food, that same food, becomes so potent that it enables you to recognize Krishna, the source of all energy. Just like when you eat, you would never do that, but if you ate food that's been cooked by someone with tuberculosis, you're gonna get tuberculosis. Similarly, if you eat food cooked by someone who's Krishna conscious, then you'll be infected with Krishna consciousness. Yes, we thought so too. Any other questions? So these are very fascinating subjects, and we recommend that you look at the books we have. They're the best spiritual literature in the world by far. Nothing hazy, nothing cloudy and vague. They challenge your concepts and take you far beyond your stereotype thinking. They introduce you to Krishna. And we recommend this for everyone. And if you don't like to read so much, then you can sing the Hare Krishna mantra and dance in ecstasy. And everybody, whether you like to read or not, everybody eats. So you come here and you take the food that's been offered to Krishna. So this is your introduction to the wonderful world of Krishna consciousness. There's so many things I could talk about. Lifestyles, patterns of behavior, how to become spiritually perfect in a marriage relationship, or how to become spiritually perfect single. These are all things we deal with here. Why are we so attached to foolishly struggling for things that aren't going to make us happy anyway? What would we do if we ever got ourselves together? We discuss all these things here.
Talk about spiritual kindergarten.
Yes. You can do it by analyzing with your intelligence what is matter and what is spirit, what is temporary and what is eternal, like that. Are there various yoga practices no longer taught in this day and age in which you could do it? If you go to the Himalayas, you'll find yogis there alone, practicing various mechanical forms of yoga to bring them to the spiritual kindergarten. Or you can go right into kindergarten and beyond simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. That is a special chance given by Krishna, because in this present age, which is very degraded, there's no suitable conditions for even getting to the kindergarten level. It's very difficult to make gradual progress in this day and age because everything is so hectic and everything is so agitated. Therefore, the Vedic literature is advised, just go straight to the top right away. Don't try to go gradual. It's a special dispensation meant for this very degraded time we live in which everyone is so spiritually ignorant. The gradual processes require a long lifespan. So the Vedic literature is described. Times in history where people live much longer than they do now. But nowadays, compared to what the Vedic literature talks about, life is very short. You don't have time to go to kindergarten, then first grade, second grade, third grade, like that. Immediately, you can go to the university. Immediately. Because you don't have much time. And things are so agitating and disturbed that you can't gradually make progress. Immediately, go for the top. And by chanting Hare Krishna, immediately, you not only get the spiritual kindergarten, but you also get the university too. It's a special dispensation for this very troubled age we live in. Enlightenment means you can see. Now, what is it that you see? That we have to know. It means that we see the Self and the Supreme Self. You cannot see the Self properly without seeing the Supreme Self, because you're a part of the Supreme. Just like you would never say you're everything, right? That means you're part of something. Now, what is it you're part of? To understand your spiritual identity properly, you have to know what my spiritual identity is part of. So you are a tiny spiritual identity, and then there's a supreme spiritual identity. So enlightenment means to see in the light, see clearly the relationship between the individual spirit soul and the supreme soul. Yes. Kindergarten is just that, kindergarten. It's not the actual ultimate. It's just the beginning. But just see how far people are even from kindergarten. Remember, in kindergarten, spiritual kindergarten, you have to understand that there's an all-pervading spiritual energy. You have to have no hankering and no lamenting. You have to see all living entities as equal, no matter what kind of body they have. So, see, everybody say is far from spiritual kindergarten. No, it isn't though. Enlightenment means you go far beyond understanding as an all-pervading spiritual energy. Enlightenment means you understand that the all-pervading spiritual energy is just the emanation from someone. Just like you, even with your temporary body, can exude various things. You can put out various substances. Similarly, the Supreme Person can also put out things. The Vedic literature describes that just like the sun, although situated in one place, can put out immense quantities of heat and light. Similarly, the Supreme, Krishna, situated in one place, can put out immense energies. If you come here more, you'll find out that there's more to the Supreme than just creating and maintaining. That's considered insignificant. The specialty of Krishna is supreme enjoyment. The very thing we're trying for in this world and fail at, that is what the Supreme does unlimitedly. Why are we trying for enjoyment in this world? Because we're part of Krishna, and therefore we have that tendency in a minute degree to try for pleasure. But we're failing. Just think of the ridiculousness of the situation. We're trying for pleasure with temporary bodies of matter. But that's why it's so frustrating. We're always defeated. You know that expression? It's too good to be true. You tell your friends sometimes that. I'm amazing. I can't believe it. It's just too good to be true. It is. It's not true. It always just disappears, slips through your fingers. Still, we have this tendency to want to enjoy because we're part of Krishna, and Krishna has an unlimited tendency to enjoy and an unlimited capacity to enjoy. We have a tiny capacity to enjoy. We get frustrated real quick, and we have practically no capacity to fulfill. We have a tiny desire to enjoy, and then we get frustrated, and we have no capacity practically to fulfill those desires to enjoy. That's why we get neurotic sometimes. What will become of me? What to do? But Krishna has the unlimited ability to enjoy. Because we're part of Krishna, we have this tendency to want to enjoy, but we're in the wrong place. Just like you can remember a little bit when you were 15, yeah? Did you ever think that you would be like the way you are now when you were 15? Right, never thought about it. See, this is the problem. No one does any real advanced planning for their life. They can't grasp the whole picture of their life. Because the contemplative or thinking power is not there. It's been destroyed by a very materialistic society that doesn't want people to think. Basically, this is supposed to be your understanding. When you were 15 years old, you needed to buy certain things, and now that you're 35, you needed to buy some things. That's it.
Goodbye.
What was it I said? That's buying. It's buying then too. You bought into the system. Who paid for those teachers in schools? Your parents did. You paid, right. Exactly. Tax money. Yeah, so you were buying. You're buying into the system. The system said, pay your money, your taxes, we'll give you schools, and you'll get a better future. So you bought into it. Yeah.
But again,
what you bought into. Do they teach you who you are? Or anybody is. Sounds like a complete failure then. Could they teach you, are you matter or are you spirit? All right, okay, did they teach you that in Sunday school?